Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Herbie, let's go.
Anthony Herron.
All we got to do is do our job and punch him in the mouth every single play. Yeah.
Football insider for 670 The Score.
We do what we do. We drive all game long.
And Fox 32.
Majority of folks here in my life do pronounce it Herron. Even like my pops, who he should know how our last name is pronounced.
And the Pac-12.
How many jobs you got?
One.
One job.
And Big Ten Sirius XM.
Whole lot of Herron out there.
Anthony Herron talking ball with Lawrence Holmes on 670 The Score.
We are going to get to Anthony in just a minute. There is some breaking baseball news that is significant. I had heard there are a lot of rumblings around baseball that the penalties for the Astros cheating were going to be severe. But I kept wondering to myself, how severe is it actually going to be? Is MLB actually going to do something with some teeth? Well, it looks like they have. It looks like MLB has concluded their investigation on the 2017 championship that the Astros won. And what they have decided to do is take Jeff Luhnow and A.J. Hinch, the GM and the manager of the Astros, and suspend them for a year. Wow. Plus, the Astros are fined the Major League Baseball maximum of $5 million. They lose first and second round picks in 2020 and 2021. Damn. Okay. I was hoping that if they found that the Astros were out here doing illegal stuff, that they would actually punish them. This punishment is in line with what I was hoping. Like, it's one of those things where you never expect an organization to do the right thing and come down on a team for bad doing, for wrongdoing. This is major. This is absolutely major. So if you're just jumping in, you're just in the car, MLB has said that their investigation is concluded and they believe the Astros were cheating and they have punished them severely. The GM and the manager are suspended for a year. Wow. They are fined the maximum and they lose first and second round picks for the next 2 years.
Still worth it, though, for the World Series, though.
Yeah, probably. I mean, if you're trading it off, you're probably saying, yeah, it's still worth it. But if you're Luhnow or Hinch, this is with you forever. You're the two guys that were caught cheating and suspended for a year because of cheating. Holy crap. Can you guys check in with Bruce? And then maybe later on in the show, we can find some time to talk with Bruce about this, but this is, man, and that's courtesy, by the way. That was the Jeff Passan who had that story initially, from what I saw. That is one of the most severe punishments in sports history, isn't it? I mean, outside of taking Donald Sterling away from his franchise, the fact that you have a sitting GM and a sitting, like, the manager, like, you got to go home. Like, you have to go. You can't be here anymore.
It's got a Bounty Gate vibe to it, where you take Sean Payton off the sidelines for a season. You remove the defensive coordinator, Greg Williams, as well. It's got a similar vibe to that. And I wonder where the NFL ends up going, because we should hear something soon about the New England Patriots and this latest scandal with their videographer, supposed documentary film crew.
And it's a lot easier there to punish them when they're not getting ready to play for the Super Bowl.
Very true. Very true. And I think that's an important factor in how the NFL may come down on them. And the Astros are are kind of nouveau riche. I mean, they've obviously been a quality organization for a while, but as far as this iteration of management and manager, you know, the executives, the manager, current roster, a lot of guys who just recently went through their version of the rebuild and have been having success with it. And I would wonder, and this is, you know, the sort of the cynic in the whole situation, just viewing it with that sort of crooked eye, is whether or not baseball would come down this hard on Houston if they weren't kind of nouveau riche with it. You know, if it wasn't just the beginning of what seemed like it may become a burgeoning dynasty, if they were already in dynastic form, you know, if you were already a couple of World Series championships into it with this current crop right here. Now, I wonder if it, you know, say it was the Yankees who were caught with this.
We're gonna find out, because the Red Sox are in this mess too.
Exactly.
So here's what Ken Rosenthal is reporting now. He says MLB has placed former Astros assistant GM Brandon Taubman on its ineligible list. Discipline for Red Sox manager Alex Cora and the Houston bench coach in 2017 will be determined after MLB completes its investigation on Boston. All right. Is Kennesaw Mountain Landis in charge of this?
Baseball's in a different situation, man, because baseball's credibility is as big as anything with that sport. The perception, I think the perception of credibility is bigger in baseball than it is in any other sport. Because with football, with basketball, you know, I mean, basketball had an official that was actually caught, you know, for being involved with whatever it was, point shaving or some whatever version of cheating that was in the NBA. I mean, it seems so minuscule at this point. I don't even remember exactly what it was with the NBA ref. They survived that basically without a scratch on them. The NFL seemingly came down in the 80s on steroids and players being suspended, and we've been accustomed to that for a couple of decades now. Baseball ended up surviving and ascending back from the doldrums of one of their lockouts based off of the steroid era. And then once they came out of that and everybody kind of, you know, clapped back at baseball, then baseball said, you know what? We got a credibility problem. We can't allow that to sully our brand anymore. Now they've decided they're going to come down hard on PEDs, on domestic violence. And here we see them coming down just to try to protect the credibility of baseball. I feel like credibility, competitive advantage, the perception of players of the sport as a whole, it seems to me, is bigger in baseball than any other of the major sports out there. And I think this is them trying to make sure they're not protecting the shield, protecting whatever the baseball emblem is, I guess.
The hitman.
There you go.
You got the hitman's
whoever
out
that
there.
Logo is. Yes,
no, we know
that.
Who it is, right? Who is it? Is it George Brett? Who is the baseball logo? We supposedly know who it is.
Should be Tony Gwynn, but
well, maybe. Mr. Padre? Yeah. It could totally be him. I see people.
Said that when I looked over at Herb, and Herb reminded me of Tony Gwynn.
He is Mr. Padre. Uh-huh. I know that there are a lot of people. There are people who are texting me saying it's not severe enough. Man,
it's a big deal, man.
To not have your manager, your GM for a year.
Yeah. Our guy, Shepkowski, says it's Harmon Killebrew.
It's Harmon Killebrew.
Okay.
That'll work. That's
ginormous.
And then to take the first and second round picks for the next 2 years. Now, the money thing is whatever.
Right.
But they find them maximum.
There's limits on it. Right.
And that's the limit. They went all the way up to the limit. Someone said it's like a speeding ticket. No, it's not. Like, to not have your manager or GM.
The $5 million is like a speeding ticket. Sure. Yeah. Call that just with the dollars and cents of it. But the rest of this, to not have your manager or general manager for a season, is a huge deal.
I don't know if they even have it in their power to strip a title from a team. I know that that's what a lot of people want, is the idea of stripping. But yeah, I think this is a tremendous punishment.
And, you know, to relate it to my sport, to football, and what may come down with the Patriots, like last time around when Spygate, or actually, no, it was Deflategate, where I was in the mindset of wondering whether or not, because one thing, to spend Tom Brady for a month, that's a big deal. To take Hall of Fame player, maybe the best QB of all time, take him off the field for a month, sure, that's a big deal. The money, the draft pick, okay, those are big deals because they went to the limits of what they could in finding the Patriots for Deflategate. Now, this time around, I was wondering whether or not Bill Belichick would end up catching any flack, catching any of the shrapnel off of Deflategate, and he didn't that last time around. Now you got a second Spygate with the Patriots. I'll be very curious whether or not Belichick and his status within the league. I mean, he utters something publicly and suddenly rules gets changed in the NFL. He's got that level of stature, future Hall of Famer, whether or not the NFL ends up deciding that Bill Belichick, and really it's, you know, Roger Goodell is going to be the pincushion for whatever does or doesn't happen. It's really the owners around the league who end up sort of being the puppet masters on where the league office ends up going with some of these things. And I wonder a bit if Bill Belichick will catch some of the shrapnel this time around, because I know that a number of teams around the league feel like they've had enough of what they think the Patriots attempt to get away with, quite often do get away with, and we'll see. So this certainly, just for me, through my football brain, seeing what's happening with the Astros here puts me in that frame of reference of, all right, we're going to hear something with the Patriots pretty soon here too. And I wonder if this will in some way shape that.
That would be interesting to see if you get like a cross sport thing where they can, you know, say, well, look, this is how hard we came down on this and you are a multiple offender.
It'll certainly shape the public perception of it, you know, because if they're like, hey, baseball took a dude off the sideline for a year and the GM for a year, and you're letting Belichick skate again.
And I really do think that if we were talking about Tom Brady and Bill Belichick playing in the AFC title game this week,
I think that's a great point.
I feel like it's the hammer is more likely to fall on them because they are not in the spotlight. And there's things like in question.
Right.
Like whether or not Tom's going to go back there and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. But if you're just joining us, it's a big news item. MLB has concluded their investigation on the Astros. They still have one that's going on with all the Red Sox guys. But they've concluded that the GM and the manager are suspended for a year. The team has to give up $5 million, which is the maximum that a team that can be fined. And they lose first and second round draft picks over the next two seasons. Big Ant Heron is here with me. Crazy week of football this weekend in the divisional rounds. Yeah. What caught your eye?
The quarterback position and the juxtaposition of it between Saturday's games and Sunday's games, I thought stood out quite a bit, because Saturday's games were offenses that were more geared towards trying not to force their quarterbacks to have to show. And we were talking about this on STL on Friday over at the UC, where you had offenses who were set up to try and not force their quarterbacks into a position of needing to shoulder the load of the offense, to shoulder the brunt of every movement of the ball, of every point that's going to be on the field, of taking pressure off the opposing defense, all those things. And then Sunday, very different. Sunday, you have a different caliber of quarterback on display, and you saw that really in both games. So that just the juxtaposition of Saturday's games, where I think Mitch Trubisky sitting there looking at Saturday's quarterbacks like, really? These dudes winning playoff games playing like that, and I'm kind of the heel in Chicago? Whereas Sunday's like, all right, that's what everybody's hoping for. Winners and losers, that's what everybody's hoping for from their quarterback position when you look at Sunday's games.
What happened with Baltimore?
I think the rest versus rust. Now, I was talking to Shep about this when we were on yesterday. It's so situationally based, you know, because Baltimore did look a bit rusty, but at the same time, you know, I mean, I don't necessarily think that the layoff can be a reason why. I mean, it can be. I don't look at that and say that Baltimore's layoff is the reason they looked a bit rusty, a bit off, out of sorts, you know, early in that game. To me, it was just more about what Tennessee was able to do early on to put them behind the eight ball. And then, you know, like the point I've made with you a few times here, to put Baltimore's offense in a position where, all right, Lamar's going to have to win it from the pocket because he's down multiple scores and he's facing a ferocious pass rush. So now you're in a position where Baltimore has to keep their quarterback more frequently as a stationary target to allow the entire field to be available to him, you know, with his reads. And I thought overall, you know, I mean, it wasn't his best game throwing the ball. I thought he threw the ball pretty well. I thought some of the early drops were a big negative for their offense, because you get out of rhythm, you're not moving the chains, you're back off the field, the opponent takes the field with more confidence. And I do think overall, I thought Lamar threw the ball well. I didn't think, especially as the game wore on and Tennessee's defense had him in more predictive situations, then yeah, it's harder to throw into those tight windows and he's probably pressing a little bit more, ball starts to sail on you a little bit. But overall, for the situation he was in, dealing with the drops and everything else, I thought he played fine. Now, I thought running the ball was where Mark Ingram not being on the field, I thought that made a big difference, especially in short yardage, where now Lamar is your short yardage back, where now on fourth and one, you're going with your, let's whatever he is, 195, 200 pounds, whatever. I mean, he doesn't have a neck anymore, so he's probably gained a lot of weight at this point. But whatever he is, he's not necessarily power short yardage guy. He's not Josh Allen. You know, he's not Cam Newton in those scenarios. So now you have Lamar.
He's more run around you versus run through
you. Exactly. And they did a great job of continuing to force him to move laterally, to have to bounce the ball to where the help is. They did a great job from a pursuit standpoint. And it's a little underrated because we think about professional athletes and pro football players and how they may or may not prepare during the week. But you could tell there was actual time spent during the week on pursuit angles with Lamar Jackson and how they forced him inside out as opposed to overrunning him and allowing the cutback, the spin move, some of those highlight runs we've seen from him throughout this season where folks overrun their pursuit and he's able to because he's got great vision and elusiveness, cut it back against the grain and turn it into a bigger play. And over again, we saw Tennessee's defense inside out, forcing him towards the sideline when he looked for that cutback lane against the grain, it just wasn't there. So in the run phase, yeah, he struggled with that throughout the day, even though the yardage ended up being big, but it was on a volume of carries, and he's a fantastic runner. But overall, I was more impressed with what they did against Lamar the runner than I was against Lamar the passer, because I thought overall, if guys were catching the ball, I think he would have had even bigger numbers throwing. I thought overall he threw it fine. Not special, but fine.
How do you explain what they have done Tennessee has done offensively to get themselves in a position where they're now playing for a Super Bowl?
Well, for their offense, and I'll continue to beat this drum of where whether it was Marcus Mariota as the starter or now Ryan Tannehill executing this at a higher level, I think we have a prime example of what the Bears offense should have been attempting to be this season. Now that they ain't got Derrick Henry as a back. I like David Montgomery. Up to this point, he ain't Derrick Henry, but you do have a mentality that predated Mike Vrabel that he's come in and taken to another level where you have a mentality that your offense is going to lead with the ground attack. You're going to diminish the possessions that your opponent gets. You're going to diminish the exposure for your quarterback to have to read from within the pocket, which was something that the athletic, the former college wide receiver, Ryan Tannehill, struggled with that throughout his time in Miami. So now, hey, Tannehill, just go ahead and run it around a little bit. Make some plays with your legs. Let's do some boots. Let's do some sprints. And when you need to make some big throws from the pocket, go ahead and do it. Just, we're not going to ask you to do it a lot. And that's where a lot of the offenses in Saturday's games were really geared towards. Let's see if we can diminish the exposure of the quarterback, of the offensive line, which the physicality that both teams possessed up front was definitely on display. And that was one where Tennessee winning that matchup on both lines of scrimmage was thoroughly impressive because Baltimore is a very physical team on the line of scrimmage, and the Titans were able to move them. Now, even when the O-line didn't move the D-line, then you got 245-pound Derrick Henry bringing his own block, and that BYOB action just where he's thumping dudes over and over again. It was a funny sort of image of Earl Thomas and some of the noise he talked during the week.
And he's one of the real tough guys at the safety position.
Yeah, and he displayed toughness in one-on-one trying to go up and handle a 245-pound back by himself. He just couldn't do it. There's certain things the human body is not completely capable of, and your 200-pound safety trying to tackle the 245-pound back is one of them.
The things that we saw Saturday afternoon in Santa Clara, not San Francisco, right, in Santa Clara, was it more a product of what's wrong with the Vikings or what's right with San Francisco?
I probably viewed it through the lens of what's wrong with the Vikings. I mean, I like San Francisco. I think they're a high-level defense. They're a fine offense. They don't necessarily have any one lead back. They've got a nice offensive line. I don't necessarily even think their offensive line is that dominant. I think you've got a young head coach in Kyle Shanahan who knows the personality of what his team needs to be. And one thing I was saying to Shep yesterday was I hope when you think back to the Super Bowl loss, you know, giving up that 28-3 and the role that Kyle Shanahan played in that, and he should have run the ball more, should have bled the clock more, should have gotten into the DNA of what the situation called for, what it required to help his team attain victory. And it seems like that was maybe a line of demarcation for Kyle Shanahan, where he said never again. And in my opinion, that's where I'm hoping this season, this past season for Matt Nagy, will perhaps be some line of demarcation where he says, you know what? I need to know my personnel. I need to coach to the moment, to the situation, to the game, as opposed to a predetermined idea of what I think can have success in the NFL. What scheme I think beats this defense overall isn't nearly as important as what suits my guys. And Kyle Shanahan seems to have learned that lesson. And while he's got as crafty a playbook as you could hope for, he calls the game to this team. Regardless of how much they paid Jimmy Garoppolo after he made four starts, then they said, you know what, we're going to throw a boatload of money at that guy, and we're still not going to ask him to win the game. And that's fine, because they're winning games. And that's the most important thing. It's not about development for that guy. It's not about building anything. It's if you're in that window, how week by week do you set yourself up to win? That's what I'm impressed with, the growth of Kyle Shanahan as he's been a head coach from where he was as an OC, and he's had that opportunity to grow on the job, as I anticipate Matt Nagy will grow on the job with the Bears.
Watching Aaron Rodgers, he's not the same quarterback.
Right, yeah.
But there were still moments, and they happened a lot on third down in yesterday's game. Even the couple of the throws where they convert, a little bit behind, he had guys make plays for him. But there still seems to be a real slow heartbeat with that guy, and it's hard to not admire it.
When you even think of the slot fade that he threw to Davante Adams that closed the deal, you know, closed the show late in the game when it's third down, Seattle's got an opportunity to get off the field. If that Seahawks offense gets back out there the way that Russ was cooking, then you're thinking probably game, set, match if the Seahawks get another opportunity. Third and long, really third medium, here you are. Just the arm strength of Aaron Rodgers has gotten so much attention throughout his career, and rightfully so, because he can put the football at every blade of grass you could hope that a human being could put it to, but just the confidence to just flick the ball over the shoulder, and it's a one-on-one matchup, and there's plenty of space towards the outside, but in that situation where the Packers' season is truly on the line in that moment, you might put your defense back out there if you throw it too far, you know, over the head of Davante Adams, you fit it too much towards the inside where the safety has a chance to come in and break it up, or if it's too short, well, all right, he's beat the nickel, so now here it is. Nickel's got a chance to turn around and make a break. But he's so – that slow heartbeat you're referencing, where there's so much confidence in his ability to hit his guy in stride. We saw it the week before where Russell Wilson was doing it in a situation where he pretty much on – I think it was like a third and one or fourth and one maybe, where he was able to hit the deep pass to the Ole Miss to DK Metcalf, and he hits a deeper pass to that. But the willingness to still stay within your mechanics and just flick it and make it a catchable pass where you're hitting your guy in stride in a situation where you have to, it's kind of like not blowing a layup, but a lot of dudes blow layups in that moment. And that's where, you know, and I was tweeting at Herb about it yesterday, that's where as the clock ticks down and the sands of the hourglass affect people, it affects a lot of people in different ways. And you see a lot of folks who kind of clinch up when it comes down to crunch time at the end of the game, but A-Rod is not one of those dudes.
Anthony, I appreciate you jumping in here.
Yeah.
I'm sorry
that
we have to truncate our conversation, but we'll continue it on Championship Sunday at my house.
It'll be fun doing that,
having him over at the crib. This segment is brought to you by Subway. Subway restaurants feature a different 6-inch sub for $3.79 every day. Subway, make it what you want. At participating restaurants, additional charge for extras plus applicable tax. No additional discounts or coupons may be applied. Major League Baseball has finished their investigation on the Astros, and they have come down with some penalties on it. We are going to talk with Matt Spiegel, host of Inside the Clubhouse, host of Hit and Run here on The Score. He's going to give us a little history lesson and some context to what we are finding out about this. Draft picks, first and second round for the Astros, gone for 2020 and 2021. Their general manager and their manager both suspended for a year. And I think it's year to date, just reading some of the reports and not just a season. But we'll find out more as the next couple of hours go on. But Matt Spiegel is scheduled to join me next here on
Call from Mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
The score. Major League Baseball has put out a 10-page recap summary of their punishment of the Houston Astros and why they felt it necessary. We're going to talk with our guy, Matt Spiegel, coming up momentarily. But I just wanted to give you some of the stuff from Rob Manfred's pen on this discipline that happens, because there's some questions that people have asked that get answered here. Here's what it says in the PDF. I find that the conduct of the Astros and its senior baseball operations executives merits significant discipline. I base this finding on the fact that the club's senior baseball operations executives were given express notice in September of 2017 that I would hold them accountable for violations of our policies covering sign stealing, and those individuals took no action to ensure the club's players and staff complied with those policies during the 2017 postseason and the 2018 regular season. The conduct described herein has caused fans, players, executives, and other MLB clubs and members of the media to raise questions about the integrity of games in which the Astros participated. And while it is impossible to determine whether the conduct actually impacted the results on the field, the perception of some that it did cause a significant harm to the game. Astros team discipline. The club will forfeit its regular first and second round selections in the 2020 and 2021 first year player drafts. To the extent that the club does not have a regular first or second round selection in either of those years by operation of the basic agreement of Major League rules, the club shall forfeit the applicable selection in next first year player draft in which it possesses such selection. For the purpose of clarity, the club will forfeit two regular first-round selections and two regular second-round selections in total. The forfeited draft selections will be removed from the selection order, and all other selections will move up. The club will pay my office a fine of $5 million, which is the highest allowable fine under the Major League Constitution. Individual discipline. Jeff Luhnow shall be suspended without pay for the period beginning on January 13, 2020, and ending on the day following the completion of the 2020 World Series. During the period of his suspension, Luhnow is prohibited from performing any services for or conducting any business on behalf of the Astros or any other major league club. Luhnow must not be present in any major league, minor league, or spring training facilities, including stadiums, and he may not travel with or on behalf of the club. During the period of his suspension, my office will discuss with Luhnow an appropriate program of management/leadership training to ensure that no incidents of the type described in this report occur in the future. If Luhnow is found to engage in any future material violations of the Major League rules, he will be placed on the permanently ineligible list. AJ Hinch
shall be suspended without pay for the period beginning on January 13, 2020 and ending on the day following the completion of the 2020 World Series. During the period, same rules apply for him that they do for Lou now. Based on his inappropriate conduct in the clubhouse, Brandon Taubman shall be ineligible to perform services on behalf of any major league club, either as an employee or independent contractor, through the day following the completion of the 2020 World Series. So that's from the pen of Rob Manfred. You can read the whole thing at MLB.com. Matt Spiegel hosts Inside the Clubhouse for us. He hosts Hit and Run for us. He is our baseball expert. I now go to him for some context here. So, Speaks, first of all, thanks for joining me. I appreciate you jumping on with the breaking news. Secondly, what's your reaction to this?
This is incredibly harsh. Apparently, there are some who think it could be harsher, should be harsher. It doesn't matter if the title is not technically vacated. It has an asterisk forever. And this is the first time that multiple members of the same organization have been suspended concurrently since the Black Sox scandal. And what they do is they came down on the adults. They came down on A.J. Hinch, even though he didn't start it, and apparently he didn't like it. Doesn't matter. You're in charge, and it's your responsibility. Jeff Luhnow, who apparently played dumb, as you just read some of that stuff. I'm not buying that. But Jeff Luhnow, they come down on. And I think Alex Cora, once they finish the Red Sox investigation, is going to get the harshest punishment of all. Because Alex Cora, if you read this full document that you've been quoting from, Lawrence, is the one who, along with Carlos Beltran, invented the scheme. Alex Cora is the one who called the replay room and said, hey, can we get this on a monitor? And they were like, okay. So Alex Cora started it, and they did it. And this is a huge stain on the game over the last couple years. And once the Red Sox stuff comes out in 2018, I think we're going to think about them concurrently, because I would think that Alex Cora brought the same system that he invented in Houston up there to Boston. And you're talking about the minuscule difference between excellent teams and world championship teams. And think about how small the difference was between the Astros and Dodgers, or the Red Sox and Dodgers. And it was guys making contact with two strikes. J.D. Martinez and Mookie Betts, wow, they made great contact with two strikes. They turned into contact hitters. How did they do that? Probably like this. Alex Bregman and George Springer becoming better contact guys while they kept all their slugging in their arsenal. How did they do that? Probably like this. It's a damn shame. And it had to be dealt with severely, and I think this is very, very severe from MLB. I'm in the rare position of being pleased with Rob Manfred. It's uncomfortable, frankly, and unfamiliar, Lawrence, but I think that he did the right thing by coming down as harsh as he did on the Astros.
Talking with Matt Spiegel here, host of Hit and Run, host of Inside the Clubhouse, after these big penalties by Major League Baseball, I share your thoughts on and it being severe. And you've been one of the people that have said, look, the collateral damage of this is significant too, where you have a guy like Yu Darvish, who is painted as a choker and is kind of a broken man after his experience against the Astros.
Right. That's just one avenue to go down, is him having his pitches tipped, apparently, or having the sign stolen in that World Series. And then, of course, his own makeup is his own responsibility. He's a sensitive man, and perhaps it shouldn't have affected him the entirety of the next year. But look what it did. And it, as part of affecting him that entire next year, it affects the Cubs in a window. It affects the fact that they then have to go out and spend money on Cole Hamels, and then they're unsure of what Darvish can bring the next year. So they have to bring back Cole Hamels on the $25 million option. That precludes them from doing something last year in the offseason, possibly. So, yeah, all those kind of tangents, multiply that. Just take that exponentially towards any other team that these organizations defeated. If the Dodgers have to be sitting there, Andrew Friedman, whether he knew about this or not, the temptation in this offseason for the Dodgers and the Yankees to spend hundreds of millions to get over the hump and deliver that one title when they might have had a title over the last 2 years had the Astros and Red Sox not done this. So It's certainly not about Darvish or the Cubs specifically, but that's one example of the tangential effect of cheating. And it's massive in that way. And here's the thing, Lawrence. The whole thing with the Red Sox involvement and that investigation moving forward, with the way that the players talked about it in that report, which largely got kind of forgotten over the past couple of weeks in the NFL playoffs and such, it was starting to have a really steroidsy kind of stench to it, a real tip of the iceberg PED situation kind of stench to it. And when you think about how long it took baseball to get a handle on its steroids mess, from the Andro found in Mark McGwire's locker in 1998 until the Mitchell report in 2007, is 9 years before anybody really gets penalized for anything. Congress gets involved in 2005, and Clemens before Congress in 2009. Baseball had to keep it from going on that long in this sort of known awkwardness where the fans get disgusted and start doubting everything. And the good news for baseball is that they didn't have to collectively bargain this punishment. They didn't have to collectively bargain like drug testing. Say, hey, guys, we really need to go after this. Guys, will you help? Please, guys. They didn't have to do that. They could just bring down the hammer. And that's what Rob Manfred did.
Speegs, I appreciate you jumping on with the great context. I'm sure that you'll have more reports throughout the week. Thank you, sir.
You got it, Lawrence.
That is Matt Spiegel. And I do wonder what ends up happening with the Red Sox now and what happens with Alex Cora, because he is front and center in this situation.
Will he get more because he was part of two different organizations doing this?
That's one of the things I'm wondering. I'm wondering how severe this is. Because here's what it says. To go back to the report. Factual findings. And again, if you can read the whole PDF yourself, MLB.com has a link to it inside their story on this. Under factual findings, rules violation of 2017, it reads, at the beginning of the 2017 season, employees in the Astros video replay review room began using the live game feed from the center field camera to attempt to decode and transmit opposing team sign sequences. Which sign flashed by the catcher is the actual sign? For use when an Astros runner was on second base. Once the sign sequence was decoded, a player in the video replay review room would act as a quote-unquote runner to relay the information to the dugout, and a person in the dugout would notify the players in the dugout or signal the sign sequence to the runner on second base, who in turn would decipher the catcher's sign and signal the batter from second base. Early in the season, Alex Cora, the Astros bench coach, began to call replay review room on the replay phone to obtain the sign information. On at least some occasions, the employees in the replay review room communicated the sign sequence information by text message, which was received on the smartwatch of a staff member on the bench, or in other cases, on a cell phone stored nearby. Approximately 2 months into the 2017 season, a group of players, including Carlos Beltran, discussed that the team could improve on decoding opposing team signs and communicating the signs to the batter. Cora arranged for a video room technician to install a monitor displaying the center field camera feed immediately outside of the Astros dugout. The center field camera was primarily used for player development purposes and was allowed under MLB rules at the time when used for that purpose. Witnesses have provided largely consistent accounts of how the monitor was utilized. One or more players watched the live feed of the center field camera on the monitor, and after decoding the sign, a player would bang nearby trash can with a bat to communicate the upcoming pitch type to the batter. Witnesses explained that they initially experimented with communicating sign information by clapping, whistling, or yelling, but that they eventually determined that the banging of a trash can was the preferred method of communication. Players occasionally also used a message gun to bang the trash can. Generally, one or two bangs corresponded to certain off-speed pitches, while no bang corresponded with a fastball. Witnesses consistently described this new scheme as player-driven, and with the exception of Cora,
non-player staff, including individuals in the replay review room, had no involvement in this banging scheme. However, witnesses made clear that everyone proximate to the Astros dugout presumptively heard or saw the banging. In addition to players using the monitor installed near the dugout to decode signs, employees in the Astros replay review room continue to decode sequences using the monitors in the room and communicate those sequences to the dugout for use when a runner was on second base. Both methods of sign stealing were used by the team in parallel throughout the 2017 season. Alex Cora is going to be suspended forever. Right? Isn't that what we're hearing here? If you've got the GM and the manager gone for a year, the ringleader of this, he's going to be gone a while.
They troll MLB and hire Joey?
Wow. Talk to McNeil and Parkins about this next here on The Score. I got a little ahead of myself. I'm going to talk with McNeil and Parkins' show coming up in a little bit. Chef's going to be sitting in for Park today. Bottom of the hour is being brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. If you want to sign a one-day contract with the Chicago Wolves, that comes with a $5,000 signing bonus. Go to chicagowolves.com/sprint to learn how to win the Sprint Power Play payday. People are asking, well, what about Alex Cora and Carlos Beltran? They haven't ruled on that yet. I imagine both of those guys are going to be punished severely.
I read a little bit of this. It says that since Beltran was a player and no players have been punished or will be punished, Beltran gets to skate.
I don't know if he's going to get to skate, though. Can you have a manager of a team, even though he was a player at the time, skate on this? There has to be something. And Cora, fam. And I guess you could, if you wanted to, you could read it like he's not a player anymore. You know what I mean? Like, you could read it that way, and that he's going to be punished even though he was a player at the time. This is going to be really interesting. I wonder if Theo Epstein is sitting at his desk right now with his feet up on the table like, I tried to tell y'all I wasn't impressed. What about the idea that, like, the Cubs are the last legitimate World Series champions? You can make the argument. I'm just playing, but... You know.
Are they?
Okay. I mean, those are the right questions to ask. They really are. But I do wonder if there is a sense of validation from all the other teams now. Because you're like, I was wondering how we was getting our ass beat so bad. We're not that bad, are we? And then you find out they were cheating. I'll talk with McNeil and Parkins' show with Shep sitting in for Park next here on The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.